Hello, everyone, and welcome back here to our conference on building a European cultural backbone in Linz in Austria. Now we come to the final presentation for today, and this will be by Sébastien Noir from the European Broadcasters Union, and he will be talking about PEACH, which is their new recommendation system that powers recommendation across different partners within the European Broadcasters Union. Sébastien, we're looking forward to your presentation and hope to have a discussion afterwards.
Thank you. Thanks for the introduction. Let me just see, cause I'm not sure that the screen is still shared, so I'll just double share that again just to be sure. Can you just confirm that you have it? Because the situation changed. Yeah, now I can see it again. Should be fine.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Right, so maybe many of you have heard about the digital shift. Maybe you have heard people talking, well, it's all about a change of culture, it's all about having new tools, new ways of working, and so on. But where our focus will be today, and this is also what we try to do with PEACH, is to see how we can change what it means for the end users. And for broadcasters, end users mean basically any kind of citizens and the product that you are using, probably from the different media companies and broadcasters. And more often than not, what you see is that the content is kind of the same for everyone. So you are treated like everyone. It's like watching TV, whether you watch TV or I watch TV or you listen to radio or I listen to radio, we basically all get the same experience. And digital is basically quite different. So we'd like to serve everyone differently and we'd like to provide you with a personalized experience. So our motto is like the right content at the right time to the right user on the right device. Or we could also use the one from CBC, the radio in Canada that I quite like, which says the more we can get to know you, the better we can serve you. And I would say it's quite a journey for broadcasters or for many media companies or publishers as well, because traditionally things were quite simple. You had basically different channels. You know where you find your content. You know that probably the news show is at, I don't know, 7:30 or 8 p.m. every day. You know where your specific episode or favorite series is and when. So it's just a touch of a button and there you go, you have it. But the drawback probably is that, well, everyone gets served the same thing. If you like it, it's great. If you don't like it, well, you just have to move to another channel and hopefully you'll have it. And the culture for many of those media organizations is basically, well, we know what users want and we are in charge of scheduling that, putting the right content at the right time so that users will find that. So we know better. And over time, what happened is that obviously the web came and people said, well, now it's great. We have a new channel where we can push the content to our users. So let's just use that. We don't have just the cables and the airwaves. We have now this wonderful tube that is called the web, so we can push more content to them. At the same time, there are other giants living out there where the situation is a little bit different because everything there is personalized. Everything is user-centric. Everything is about me, my friends, my daily meetings, my daily stuff, my connections, my comments, my likes, my friends. Everything is just about me. And I have that on all my different devices. So for example, if you take something like YouTube, Netflix, Hulu, or any of those big giants, you'll see that you find your stuff, your daily life, your specific universe everywhere you go, be it in your car, on your phone, on your laptop, on your tablet, or whatever else. And basically, it's quite a different universe. Everything there is about data, is about being personalized, and it's quite a change from the traditional world of broadcasters. So our goal as PEACH was to create tools for the broadcasters to basically be able to move a little bit more on this digital side and to personalize the user experience. So first of all, it's about the content. And if we really want to be serious about providing the right content to the right person at the right time, it means we need not just editors and journalists that can pick the content, but we need also recommendation algorithm. And we need to be able to collect user data to figure out who you are and make your experience a bit more personal. Obviously, there is nothing wrong in having journalists and editors, but it's just impossible to scale. If you have millions of users, you cannot have a million of journalists or a million of editors to just select the right content for each and everyone. But obviously, it is still possible to create products where the two will basically work together. And we can also discuss that a bit later on if you want. Then if you want to provide something that is also working across different devices, because everyone has such a device in his own pocket, you need some kind of a single sign-on, a way for people to log in and find their universe everywhere. So this is quite a requirement. And then probably you also want to empower your different users. You want to give them ability to, for example, create playlists, keep things for later, maybe resume something that they have started playing on one device, on another device later on, and you need specific services to make that happen. In the same way, users have also specific rights in Europe. It's called GDPR. Probably most of you know what I'm talking about. Obviously, in German, that will be another acronym. I don't remember what it is, but I'm sure you know what it is. So users have basically rights to manage their data, be it to download the data on their own devices or to ask for the deletion of their personal data. And for that, well, you need some kind of a GDPR manager. In the end, as you understand, it's not just about the content. The content is obviously very important, but it's also about being able to manage data and manage data at scale. So having ways to collect data, to compute things like metrics, and also to derive content recommendation from the data that you collect. And for that, in the end, you need a data science platform. So because of all those different considerations and goals, we have created Peach. That we call is a kind of flexible ecosystem for the digital transformation. At least this would apply for media companies or broadcasters, people that have, let's say, audios, videos, articles, and such things that they want to promote to the citizens. We have created with them and for them this huge ecosystem. And I would say this is a tribute to my predecessor, because when he got the request to create recommendation engine, he thought, well, we should not just create a recommendation engine, we should directly create a data science platform, because it's all about data and recommendation is just one thing we may want to do with data. Probably we will be doing more in the future. So he started directly by building a data science platform. Let me just introduce you by going a bit through the different components. This way you understand how it works. And then later on, we also go into a little bit of a demo. This way you have something maybe more tangible for those who are not so technologically oriented. So the first thing that you need to have is a way to collect data. So we call that a data collection pipeline. Typically, this is for things like, well, user 42 just started watching video 25, and that was on an iPhone device at this given time, and maybe he started playing at position 23, something like that. This is a user event, and we would like to collect many of those so that we understand the different patterns that you have as a user or that people have when they are on the platform. Once you have such data, you need a way to explore the data, to see how many interactions you have, if people are coming every day or every week, or if they are very present, or on the contrary, whether you get new users every day, or if you lose users and so on. And you also want to evaluate the quality of the data that you receive. So for that, we have created what we call Peach Lab, which is based on open source software, JupyterLab in that case. And it's a way for data scientists to explore the data and to create recommendation engine for the different products that will be using them. And yeah, this is what we have. Oh, sorry. This is what we have just before. Okay. Once you have those recommendation algorithm running, maybe you'd like to evaluate them, because data scientists will tell you, well, it's great. We can see that we have a perfect regression there and the metrics are very good. But then the journalists will say, well, yes, but what does it really mean in practice? How can I have some ideas of what will be recommended to my users? And for that, we have created a tool here that we call Spectrum. And basically, you can see for a given user, a random user, what maybe he has seen in the past and what he will be recommended by the platform. And then you can judge for yourself from an editorial perspective if that makes any sense. Hopefully this works well and you will deploy that to production, which means possibly millions of users will be seeing the content that you recommend every day, every second for them. But over time, you may have question, is that really working? How much time are people waiting to get this recommendation? And are they clicking such recommendation? Is that valid for them? Is that relevant in terms of content? So we have specific dashboards where we can see those information, those metrics. We can see what is the click-through rate, how many users see the content, how many users click the content, how much time it takes for us to deliver the content, and so on. And obviously, our next goal is to try and improve the user experience over time. So maybe we would like to try a new algorithm or to refine an existing algorithm. So we can basically do A-B testing, which is a way to say, well, we give you to half of the users, we give the old algorithm, to half of the users, we give the new algorithm, and then we compare and we see if the new algorithm performs better than the old one, in which case probably we'll just keep the new one. We have also some technical bits here where we can store the content of the different media companies that are working with us, because sometimes it's a little bit tricky for them to provide the data quickly and efficiently to us. So we have also specific metadata databases, if you wish, where we can store that. So that's about the data science platform, but we have also this blue-green part here on the right, which is all about the user. So we have our own login system, which can work, if desired, with social networks like Google, Twitter, and others. So we can use the logins of those platforms, but we can also have our own identity here if we want to. This way, you don't have to use those big platforms' login. And we have created all those different specific services for users. So for example, for the users to manage their own playlist, to keep a history of whatever they see on the platforms, so that we can integrate that quite easily on different mobile applications. We let also users manage their data with the GDPR manager, and we are also able to collect explicit information from the users. For example, if you would tell, well, I want more news, or I want less sports, or I'd like to receive notification for whenever there is new episodes being published by this specific program, you can tell so to the system, and then we can personalize the experience based on your desires. So in a nutshell, this is like a rough overview of Peach, let's say from a functional perspective. Now let's go a little bit more in the details. We can see that we have this data science platform here in the middle where we will collect the data, store the data, explore the data, do some kind of computation to understand what users do or to create recommendation algorithm. And finally, we will deliver things. And the type of data that we can consider most of the time is those user interactions. So whatever people will be doing on web applications or websites. So for example, I'm playing this media, I'm visiting this page, I'm clicking this recommendation, or I'm clicking this blue button, whatever you want to measure, we can basically get a specific data for it. The platform itself is fairly agnostic to those kinds of information. So I'm often saying it as a kind of joke. If tomorrow Starbucks will come to me and say, well, can you do recommendation for coffees? How much time will it take for you to change the platform? Probably we could do it in the same day because we can collect any kind of data as an input. And then as long as we are able to do something useful with the data that we receive, we can do it on the platform. So doing recommendation for Starbucks would be quite an interesting thing to do for us. So this is the data coming from the users, but we are also very interested in the content coming from broadcasters, from media source. So we inject what we call metadata, which is basically what describes things like audios and videos. So we may have things like this is the title, this is the synopsis for this video, this is the duration, this is the category, and so on for each of the medias that we want to recommend. And there are different ways in which we can get this data, we can receive it, we can pull it from the source. We also started using transcripts for the audios and videos because this is another way of understanding better what is at hand in the content. And from all this data, we can do many different things. So we can do obviously recommendation for end users, for citizens, for like your preferred media-based application. But we are also doing recommendation, for example, for editors and journalists, and that will be then directly in the newsroom that we will provide recommendations for them. For example, when they create a new article, let's say they are writing a new piece about the war in Ukraine and how this is affecting, I don't know, theaters in the countries. Maybe there is already something that is linked to that somehow. So we are trying to find those other existing content directly in the archives, and this way they can create a link directly to the new article that they are writing at the moment. We can also have those metrics and monitoring. So this is both on a technical level as well as a business level. And as said before, we can have also ways for people to evaluate the value in what we deliver with A/B testing, with visual recommendation evaluation, and so on. So the process looks a little bit like that. We collect the data from browsers and mobile application. We explore the data. That's a job for data scientists. Then we compute, and we do that as often as we can, because every day we have new content and we have new users, and we want to serve the new users, and we also want to recommend the new content. And then we deliver it to the different applications. And finally, we monitor to understand if we are doing a good job or not, and then the process restarts. So Peach is open and privacy-centric. It's quite important for us and for our members, the members of the EBU. So it's a collaborative development. It's not a commercial service. It's something that we have created with public service broadcasters to serve their own needs and goals. At the heart, it is a data science platform that is able to provide recommendation. But it's quite important to understand that this is not a black box, because sometimes we see broadcasters saying, well, you know, we are using this commercial solution and it's great. We are shipping there all the user data that we have. Then they do some kind of magic internally. We don't really know how it works. And finally, we get recommendation. And well, for every user, we know what we have to display, what is the best content that the users should like. And it seems users are kind of happy, which is the equivalent somehow of giving up all your editorial line. You don't make any more decisions. You have lost every control possible, and you don't know what happens in this kind of black box. And we believe this is now, this is not exactly what should be done, because algorithms should be owned by the people that are creating the platforms. This defines basically your brand. It defines who you are for your citizens, for your users. So it's quite important that you are able to understand what happens and that you are able to inspect the algorithm to create the algorithm that are meaningful for you. And in this sense, Peach is really transparent because you have access to everything. You have access to the code. You can have access to the algorithm. You can change them. You can see what are the effects that this has on your public. So it's quite a different approach. Obviously, data collection has to be done according to the law, which means with user consent. Interpretation of that is a little bit different from country to country, and obviously is in the hands of those writing those web applications and mobile applications. But we try to give them every possible support to do that and to provide them with the technical means so that this is easy for them. So in a way, the goal that we have with Peach is that the broadcasters that are using it will own the data, they will own the code, they will own the algorithm, they will understand everything that is happening, and they own also the platform. So it's not some third-party service that will just magically do it for them. They are in control, they are in charge, and they can deliver something that is relevant for the audience. Peach is also quite a collaborative approach because it's not just the EBU. It's also done with the members. And we have actually developers coming from different places in Europe. At the moment, for example, we have a developer from the radio in Sweden. We have a developer quite close to you because he's in Germany, at Bayerischer Rundfunk. And we have developers in the EBU that also come from different places. We have, for example, Ukrainian people, French people, Swiss people, and so on. And in other projects that we work, we have people from all around the place. So we try to work with the well-known Scrum methodology, which is all about being agile and delivering constantly value. So this project is not over. It will never be over. Sometimes I have this question. I don't know if you have heard that already, but people ask, well, when is the project over? And my answer is quite simple. I would say, well, we are over as soon as the Netflix project is over. And then people start to realize, all right, Netflix is not really a project. Actually, it's a product, and it's not meant to be over soon. And our goal is pretty much the same. We want to deliver value constantly to our users, our citizens. And basically, Peach is always in development, but that's a good thing. It's not also just like some lab thing that is out there and just to show some fancy thing. It's really used in production by many members. You can see that we have users in Germany, in Portugal, in Sweden, Ireland, Lithuania, Sweden, and we have more people in the pipeline that are willing to be integrated. So we really delivered recommendation to millions of people around Europe at the moment. Let's go to maybe something easier to understand, because maybe that's a bit too much technical for some of you. We had this goal in 2019, before the pandemic, when people were still traveling, to do a demonstration at the IBC in Amsterdam. So that's the International Broadcasting Conference. And we had this big question, how can we show to people, how can we display the work that we do? How can we demonstrate recommendation algorithm? And obviously, if we were to show you that we are doing great on the content from the Swedish radio, maybe it will be a little bit hard for you to evaluate whether the recommendation really is helpful, because first of all, we know nothing about you. And second, probably Swedish content is not like the easiest for you to understand. So we took basically all those well-known movies and series that probably many of you know, which is also publicly available on the web, and we created a little demo. And by the way, you can also try that on your phone or on your computer if you wish. This is available publicly. So we call that Peach Movies, and you have it at peach-movies.ebu.io. You have it here on the screen. Feel free to just try it. And basically, you have those different well-known series and movies here. And you can just pretend that you have watched some of them. So for example, let's say that I'm a big fan of The Hobbit and of Ice Age and maybe something quite different. Let me see, maybe Black Mirror as well. Let's pick another one, maybe Indiana Jones. So here at the bottom, you have my supposed user history, what I have watched. And here in the middle, we have recommendations. So you can see that, I watched The Hobbit. Oh, big surprise, I'm recommended with two other Hobbits here. So probably that would be good for me. Then I have another Indiana Jones that goes with the one that I have selected, and Ice Age with Ice Age. Yeah, it seems to be working, but you could say no real magic in here. Still, we will see that there is a bit of magic here. If I'm selecting something different here, I could say I'd like a bit more diversity, you know, because here it's all about Hobbit, Ice Age, and Indiana Jones, but there's nothing about Black Mirror. So if I'm asking for some bit of diversity, now the humans here are taking shape, and I can see that, and I can still explore more recommendations for me. We can also do something a bit weird, and maybe you'll understand a bit more after, but if I'm trying to compute what would be like some kind of a mean or average of the content that I'm consuming, which is really strange when you see the content that I've selected, I will get another set of recommendations. Let's try that. And now you can see that Ice Age is taking the lead, followed by Hobbit and Riders. Well, that's still valid recommendation for me. And we have also something where we treat a little bit differently the content that I have in my user history. We call that decay, because over time we can say we lose interest of things in the past. So if I go on the far extreme and I update, then it's all about my last thing here in my user history. And if I go at the opposite side, it will be mostly about the things that I have in the middle, in the beginning of my user history, and in the middle it will be some kind of a mix. So this is how it works, and it seems very simple and stupid. Try that on your own computer. But how do we know that this is good recommendation? How is that working behind the scenes, you could say? Well, it's simple, right? We have here 81.6%, which means this is similar to this one with a score of 81%, and this one is probably similar with 73%, and this one with 71%. Great, but how do we know that this is similar with such a value? So behind the scenes, we are using a deep learning system that looks a little bit like that. So every point that you see here is basically one of those content. And it's represented here in three dimensions. But what we are using behind the scenes is written here is in 100 dimension. And this tool is mapping that to only three dimensions so that we pure humans can have a chance to understand what is happening. So if I look for something, maybe let's say Casino Royale here, we can see that we have other items that are close to this one here in this 100 dimension space. And we can see that we have all the James Bond movies here that are quite close to it. And this is how we do recommendation. Another question comes, how do we create such a model? Well, we created it by using the text that we have for those different movies that we can find online. So things like synopsis, summary, title, user reviews, and so on. And using this freely available text, we are able to create recommendation for those different movies. So it may seem quite simple to say, well, Hobbits, you get more Hobbits, but this is not something we have in the database at all. This is just the model figuring out that those two elements are really similar from the text that describes them. You could say, well, that's a nice little story, but what use can we have for something like that in the real life? Because this is a nice toy, maybe for my Saturday evening, but how is that useful for broadcasters? Well, we can apply similar techniques on news, and this is what we have done after the IBC. We thought, well, this could be useful for journalists. So, for example, here I have a story about Navalny and Putin and the war in Ukraine. and using quite similar techniques, we are able to do without any human interactions. We can find in a database of close to 1 million articles that will be related to this one. So we have here this one about from ARD. We have this one from Ireland. We have, yeah, quite some content about Navanli, and I can keep exploring. Right, this is another article. And from this article, again, I can see other articles that are related. So things that are quite simple in the beginning can be very useful for journalists, because this way they can tame this huge amount of content that they have in the system. Let me be quickly going back to the presentation, and then we'll have time for questions. I will just move a little bit further, maybe skipping the technical bits. And I just want to end with this here. I don't know if you have ever thought about that, but at the moment, probably if you consider the whole of humanity, the best brains, the best people, and probably quite a lot of resources are being used to do things like tagging cats' pictures that are on social networks, or trying to find your friends, or trying to recommend the best cat pictures for you, the most funny and nice things. And maybe there is nothing wrong with that. But at the same time, we could also question why we as humans are spending so much energy and so much time and money to do things that, well, are not so useful in the end. And maybe we could use artificial intelligence and the best brains that we have around there to solve more important problems like fighting global warming, informing citizens and building trust and helping understand each other in new ways. And if we could move a little bit more in this direction, I guess we could shape better societies. So at least we are up for the challenge, and we'll try to play our little bit in this direction. Thank you for your attention. I'll take any questions you may have.
Thank you very much, Sebastian, for this presentation. And the room is open for questions. Yes.
Hi, Sebastian. This is Vladimir. Thanks for the presentation. I just wanted to ask, this is something that we are dealing here currently, so your presentation inspired me to ask this question. So how did you did the content metadata standardization across the partners?
Okay, so mainly here, we don't do much standardization. We standardize the data collection coming from users, because this is really helpful. So we have kind of a recommended data model. But what we see in practice is that every media company has its own ways of structuring the metadata. Some will use this given system, others will use that other system. Sometimes it's even different for the content that comes from the news, that comes from the content that they bought, content that comes from sport. So trying to bring everything in a common format will be like a project of its own and would be quite a nightmare. So in practice, we don't do that. We have some, let's say, minimal requirements. We always want to have one item that is identified by an ID. It's quite useful also to have some common fields, like we need an image, we need a title. When we are talking about audios and video, it's quite useful to have a duration and a little bit of a summary. But if we have that, I would say that's already quite a lot for us. And then that's a little bit the magic with those new AI-based models. What we need more than anything is good text. So if we can have text in one field or in multiple fields of good quality that really describes well the media, this is all what we need. And with that, we can create good recommendations. We don't need more. Sometimes people will come and say, well, you know, we have this great hierarchy of topics or tags or things like that. Could we use that? Will that improve recommendation? To some extent, yes, maybe. But even if you have a topic that says, well, it's Ukraine or it's COVID, you learn a little bit, but you don't learn so much. Because when it's COVID, what do you mean? Is that about the vaccine? Is that about the fake news? Is that how people react? Is that how people are affected by this? What's the timeline and so on? So the text usually bears more information. So we are more interested in having the text than having perfect metadata.
Thanks.
I have a question regarding the recommendation algorithms. You talked a bit about the Peach Studio, which as like, I think if I understood correctly, a Jupyter notebook-based environment that, as I would imagine, then has like a connection to that database that you built up out of the metadata in what format, whatever you have it. And then this can be used by data scientists directly in a Jupyter notebook as the data source for their algorithms.
Yes, basically there are two main types of recommendation algorithm, as you may know. There are the recommendation algorithm that are using the user data, and then obviously it means crunching quite a lot of data. It might be millions of events that we crunch every day to find patterns. For example, if you tell me that many users will be consuming A, B, and C, and you only watched A and B, it's quite likely that C would be of interest for you. So there are ways to compute such patterns and to derive recommendation from that. The good thing is that you don't need to know what A, B, and C are. It can work for coffee, it can work for audios, for videos, for many things. So when you have bad metadata or no metadata, it can be a good starting point. But we have another kind of recommendation, which we call usually a content-based. And let's say that you are watching something about, I don't know, global warming. You may just want to see more because you are interested in the topic. So there it's about finding content that will be similar. And for that, we don't need any user data. So we are really just using the content or the description of the content itself. So from this Jupyter notebooks or Peach Lab, as we call it internally, data scientists in that case are able to do both. They can explore the metadata and they can explore also the user data and create algorithm of both sorts or even combine them together. The beauty of the system lies in the fact that it's quite easy for them not only to explore the data, but then to automate the process of creating those algorithms, of updating them whenever we have new data, new content, new users. And the platform is really helping a lot. So they can deploy that in production as API endpoints very easily. It's just a matter of a few lines, and then it's out there in production in a couple of minutes.
Thanks. Further questions in the room? Let me check if there's questions online. I think not yet. Yes, Andy.
Have any of your customers already requested that you get recommendations from other platforms?
What do you mean from other platforms, like getting the data that you have on YouTube to improve the recommendation
that you would have
on the broadcasters, or
to get recommendations in the BR Mediatek from RD Audiotek, for example, or is it only based on their box?
Well, the problem that you have when you want to like share the data between different platforms is that often on two different platforms, you have different users' ID. So maybe on one platform, you are user 23, and on another platform, you are user 100. So there's no way for us to understand that you are the same person. And even if you have this connection about the user, the content might be very different. So you don't learn much about the user if you don't know also the content. So for the moment, we don't have this use case, but it could come because as broadcasters forge new alliances, sometimes such things can come to be a request. Something that is quite similar is when people have different apps. For example, they have a news app and a sports app and maybe a children app or a radio app, and then they want to create recommendation across those different universe as a broadcaster. So this is a request that we know and that will come, but we don't have it in production for the moment. It's not the first priority from their perspective, let's say, for the moment.
And I got that right. Service from you can only be used if one is on a EBU member, right?
For the moment, yes. We are always open for discussion, but this was created by the EBU. Is available. I mean, the code is owned by the EBU and by the members. So if we want to go outside, we need somehow to have a solid case that we can bring to the EBU members for them to agree that we will also do it with someone else. It's not impossible, but we need to understand the value for the EBU members for us to go in this direction.
Further questions? I have another question with regard to the recommendation part. Is there a tool set that you would recommend to implement like the content-based recommendation? Did you evaluate? Because there's quite a few things or ways how to do that, And it seems you gained quite some experience in that and likely tuned things. So are there any, like, let's say I have a huge repo of content and I want to do content-based recommendation within that repo. What would be the tools that you recommend to get started on that, apart from like implementing new algorithms yourself? There certainly is a stack of open source things that make that easier.
So you could have a look at some AI model created by Google called Universal Sentence Encoder, which abbreviation is USE. So it's a little bit hard to Google for USE, but to Google for Universal Sentence Encoder, you should find it more easily. Another one is LAPSI, so that's Language Agnostic BERT, or BERT itself. Those are very good models that basically enables you to convert some text that describes elements or articles into a vector. And from there, basically, you can start to apply the same things that you have seen before, so looking for similar contents by comparing vectors. This works exceptionally well in the cases that we have tried. And what is quite surprising is that at least two of those algorithms can even work across languages. So you are able to, for example, have a content that is in German and find another content that would be related to it, or let's say similar, that would be in English or in French, for example, without having the need to translate, which is kind of mind-blowing to me, at least. So Universal Sentence Encoder, BERT, or LABSE, LABSE, those are good things to try.
Thanks a lot. I don't see any further questions right now, so I'd like to thank you, Sebastian, for the presentation, and hope to talk to you again soon. Also, feel free to follow the program in the next days. It will be streamed online. Thanks.
Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.